Welcome to the unofficial Clutch Podcast. I am Matt, manager of San Diego Armada, and our first guest is Patrick, the manager of the Arlington Cannons, first place in the Southeast Division, 9-3, tied for the best record in the league. How are we doing so far?
Pretty good. Little worried that if I start talking about how well I'm doing, I'm going to end up 9-7, but let's go.
Yeah, I have the same thing because I'm in first place, 8-5. It's funny because I last online tournament, I had to scrap and I had to win like my last three games, and then a bunch of other stuff happened to win. So now I'm doing the math the other way, like, okay, what can I do to not mess this up, and can people still catch me? All right, so we'll start out. Talk about, so you have the Tampa Bay Stadium. Tampa Bay Field, which is the highest fly ball on the pitcher's chart as a single. And then for batters, it's Tampa Bay batters. It's both the pitchers and batters charts. Did that have any effect on how you constructed your roster at all?
A tiny bit. I got the booster box this time instead of the full set. The only Tampa Bay batters I had were Denard Span and Adani Hechavarria. Really, really wanted Kiermaier because he's a great center fielder, and he was my center fielder last season. Did eventually get him, but in a booster pack I bought after the season started, so not real helpful. But it did. I put Hechavarria on my team as my shortstop just because of that Tampa Bay effect. But honestly, other than that, not really. It's just the highest fly ball, and I'd say probably 90% of pitchers, their highest fly ball is a 17. So it's not really something you can build around and kind of target specific guys other than having Tampa Bay players.
Yeah, same thing with mine. I have the San Francisco Park, and that one is the highest walk is a single. Mm-hmm. And I obviously have a lot more Giants on my team. I did get the full set, so I was able to pull from anybody. But there's a lot more really good Giants batters in general, like Buster Posey and Brandon Belt are just good in general. That actually brings up an interesting question I was going to ask, because there's lots of things like the stadium effect and even strat cards where it's a very specific thing has to trigger, and I never had any success with that. Like the strat card, I can't remember what it is, the blooper, where it's like the highest fly ball becomes a single. I always have it in my hand, and it's always sitting there, and I never get it. So I don't know, after putting my team together, I like my team and how it turned out, but it's interesting how some stadiums are so good and then others are kind of that, where I can't even tell you, like, maybe it's triggered a couple times in my stadium, and I've also done terribly at home as well, which is kind of funny.
Mine, it's triggered a decent amount. Anything where, you know, pitcher's chart hits are pretty devastating as is, and the home field effect being that it is another pitcher's chart hit, it's not a fun stadium.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I was going to ask you about your roster construction and how you made some of your decisions. So I'm actually the opposite of you. Last year, I didn't get the full set, so I was in the same boat you are this year, where I could really only pull from what I had. I didn't have the full complement of players to choose from, where this year I did get the full set, so I was able to do it. So walk me through. You said that you didn't really, the stadium didn't have that much of an effect on you. What kind of was your plan? Because I'm looking at now, and you have Roy Halladay as your number one, and then your bullpen is anchored by Miller and, who's your closer? Is it Blake? Is he the Angel one? Oh, he's Oakland. Okay, so you went cheap on closer, and you had a good relief pitcher.
Part of my roster construction, I had an epic collapse last year in the final of the league. I had a 6-0 lead after one inning. Should have been more, because I had Chris Bryant and Edwin Encarnacion. Both came up on their own chart with the bases loaded, both got out in that first inning. Still up 6-3 heading into the ninth. Brought in George Contos, 6 command, R plus 1. Gave up 3 runs to tie it. Brought him back out in the 10th, because even with the power die, he was still my best option. Gave up another 2 runs. Pulled in his replacement, gave up 2 runs. Then bottom of the 10th, down 10-6. managed to get two runners on, and then Freddie Galvis, my nine hitter, came up, somehow got onto his own chart, then grounded out to end the season. So it was kind of a pretty big collapse. So I kind of tried to target that more than anything else. So I put Miller in, I put Brock in. So I have two pretty heavy relievers in my bullpen. And I kind of focused more on hitters who don't have a whole lot of outs on their charts. I mean, there's some, I think, I'm just taking a look at my roster now. Yeah, other than my 8 and 9 hitters, most of my guys get on base on a 5 or a 6. There's a couple 7s in there. So it was my lineup. I tried to find guys who would not have a ton of outs on their own charts, but also kind of tried to find guys who had a high on base, because the first battle of the game is on base versus command. You have to win that to even really have a shot. Yeah, that's more or less what I went for, I think. Against righties, I have a 14, a 13, four 12s. So it's kind of trying to find a more, trying to find the right word to put to it. That's more what I went for. Guys who aren't going to, who are going to get on base, essentially, and kind of keep, the more you get on base, the more you have a chance to get something going. So kind of guys who can frustrate the opposition a little bit.
The most, I don't want to say controversial, but the most, I think, talked about roster-related question for this year's set was Shohei Ohtani. Did you consider him at all? Was he ever in one of your practice lineups? What are your thoughts on him, on his card?
I didn't use him just because, honestly, I'm kind of, my team's run more towards good pitching and not terrible hitting, but like I'm not going to be rolling out a lineup with Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, Jeff Bagwell in the middle of it. I want to have pitchers who can kind of control the game a little bit, who are the more higher end ones, especially the starters. So to have Ohtani, because of his points, he's going to have to be your number one at 805, but he doesn't really, he didn't to me at least have the card of a number one pitcher. So I didn't really want to put him on the team, and also finding room for 805 points is a lot.
Yeah, I kind of went back and forth on it. I still really like him, and I think if you're smarter than me, you could figure out a really clever way of using him. Because you're right, he isn't a number one starter, but he also isn't a bad starter either. So I think something that may get overlooked is you could use him as your number one starter, and then if you have another good starter on top of that, like you wouldn't necessarily have him and Clayton Kershaw, but if you had someone in that top tier, you now have your second starter, who's really a number one starter, going up against the number two starting pitcher of everybody else. It could make for an interesting strategy. So I kind of went back and forth on it. I ended up not using him, partially because he doesn't have any icons, and also he doesn't have any benefits in any stadiums. But he's an interesting card, and it'll be interesting to see how they handle him going forward. I really like the double-sidedness of him. It'll be interesting to see.
I do, yeah. You know, roster, whether I can roster him or not aside, it is definitely an interesting card where he can, you know, he can be your number one pitcher, and then the other four games he's your DH. And especially if next year, if they do the same double-sided thing, I'd imagine he would be on the Angels. So he'll have a stadium effect that year as well.
And I think his card will be even better next year, too. I mean, his batting side is pretty average. I mean, it's good with a 4 out and a 12 R plus 1. And his speed of 12C, I think, will probably go up as well. It'll be, his pitching might stay the same if he doesn't pitch the rest of the year. But I'm really curious to see, especially with that seven innings. It's really good, too.
Yeah, that is one benefit. Him and Halliday were the only seven-inning pitchers I got. Downside of the booster boxes, you just don't have that flexibility. Yeah, I'm interested to see what they do, especially because this set, they kind of, a lot of the seven-inning pitchers went away. Like last year, you had Cole Hamels, Marcus Stroman, Garrett Richards. They were all fairly affordable seven-inning pitch options. You can kind of add them to your lineup, your three and four starters, and save on the bullpen a little bit. But this year, it's, your only seven-inning guys are top of the line.
Yeah, and I noticed too, even my starting pitchers, there's a ton of five inning pitchers, starting pitchers as well, which makes a big impact on your bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of talked about last year and this year. What are your thoughts on the changes of kind of the overall changes they made? If you compare last year's deck to this year's deck, I think it's last year's is more weighted towards hitting, where this year it's a lot more balanced.
It definitely is. Last year you had a lot of guys who could generate extra base hits. Like you had Donaldson, Duvall doubling on 14. This year the hitters are definitely noticeably worse. Like you'll have guys who would double on a 15 or 16. I'll roll a 17 now and say, oh, that's still a single. So they definitely toned down the batters a bit, but they also kind of toned down the pitchers. Like I already mentioned, you got rid of the cheap seven inning guys, but they also made the pitchers charts a lot weaker. Like last year, it was pretty rare for a pitcher to even give up a homer on a 24. Now every pitcher almost is 24 or lower home run, which I don't like because my teams are built around having good pitching. But like when you get into tailing wins, things like that, now you can have a home run on a pitcher's chart, which is an interesting effect. Not one I personally like because it kind of comes after the things I value on my team and makes them weaker. But it is interesting how that kind of adds value to that particular strat. But also just the pitchers in general are a little easier to hit off of.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because in general, I think we have the same managers as the last online league. And it's interesting to see how people kind of adapted to that. Because last year I went full aggro. You know, my lineup was like 4,000 points and my pitchers was like, you know, 1,500 or whatever. And this year you really couldn't do that, I don't think. My lineup is still weighted more than my pitching, but not nearly to the extent it was last year. I don't have a Mike Trout or anything like that. Although I guess Stanton and Goldschmidt are kind of in that region. But I kind of like it. It's I fell into the trap of kind of assuming it was similar to last year, and I had, I think James Shields is my number three or four starting pitcher, and I did not pay attention, and you can actually double on a 20 on the pitcher chart with him. I know this because it has happened to me like three or four times, which I think is good because it's more realistic. It felt like last year, if you got on a pitcher's chart, you were lucky to get a walk or a hit, where this year there's a lot more action on a pitcher's chart.
Yeah, that's very true. That's definitely helps the game a little bit overall when it's not, oh, I'm on the pitcher's chart, this is going to be an out.
Yeah, it's funny. More... with Shields, I had one inning where he gave up like three consecutive hits on his chart. And it's one of those things, like, it was in one of those periods of just having terrible luck with the dice. And it was funny because when I was pulling up your Google Hangouts chat, the last message we had before talking about this was, my last at bat against you, I rolled a natural one on a pitcher's chart, which I was like, yep, that sounds about right.
I was looking back at that because I saw that right after you rolled that one, we said good game. I was like, all right, I assume I won because of that, but I really want to see if I didn't remember how that came out.
Who won? Because I didn't look either. I assumed you did.
Yeah, 7-5.
Okay. Pretty low scoring game for me last year. Do you got a favorite player card? I mean, last year I had my man crush on Mike Trout. Who do you like in this series?
I like Rhys Hoskins, which admittedly is mostly a homer pick, but I like that he has that 13 on base and the 19 homer, and he only costs 405. I mean, he doesn't have any icons, but I don't really go heavy on icons just because they're great and they make strat better, but you kind of have to have the strat to make it better. So I'd say Hoskins is probably my favorite in this set. Trying to look and see if any of the guys on my team are particularly. I'm a fan. I have Byron Buxton as my center fielder. Big fan of him just because he's got that goal. He's got +5 defense in center field, gold glove icon. One thing I really love is getting web gem for an outfield throw and just getting a free +5 from the center fielder. So he's a good one. I'm a fan. Actually, I'm a huge fan of Jorge Alfaro this year. I mean, he's a plus five catcher, but in the league, no one really is stealing that often.
Yeah, almost never.
Exactly. So I figured I'll just go, also kind of a homer pick. He's another Philly, but four outs on his chart, 13 on base against righties, natural homer. I'm a huge fan of that card.
Yeah, I mean, looking at him, I just pulled him up, and he's not that much different. I have Buster Posey, and I mean, Posey's a defensive eight, and they both get out on a roll of four, and obviously Posey's a 13 all the time with an L plus one, but mm-hmm. that's actually a really good catcher card. And that was the one thing I noticed too, is the probably my favorite position in this year is the catchers, because there's a lot of different ones. And it's a mix of a little bit of everything. You can get someone like Jorge Alfaro, and he can hit a natural 20 on his, and he's 11, which in and of itself is respectable, and he gets an R plus two, and he's only out on four. So it was a position in general that I found really interesting this year, where there was lots of guys that were both good defensively, but then also could hit well as well. Because I felt like last year that was kind of, especially on my team, I focused so heavy on the batting chart, where it seemed like most of the guys that were good at hitting had terrible defensive numbers. This is kind of a homer pick because he's on my clutch team this year, but I was a bit fan of Matt Chapman. He's a third base. He's got a defense of three, on base of 11, clutch of plus two, gets out at seven, but he also has a 20 home run roll. He's actually done really well for me this year, and I kind of liked him because he's my nine hitter, and he's done really well. The pitcher that I am a fan of, again, kind of a homer pick because he used to be on the Padres, but Brad Boxberger is, I think, someone everybody rosters, but mostly just because he's only an 80 salary. But he's actually a decent card, especially situationally going up against lefties. He's a 3R L plus one, but he only has he has an X rating of 1-2, and he's only 80 salary. And I've used him a couple times this year and realized how I think he's a really undervalued card.
Yeah, he definitely. The people who didn't get him in their booster box did not roster him, but the cheap relievers, especially because honestly the first thing I do when I build my roster, I get the three cheapest players, the three cheapest relievers, and put them on there.
Yep.
Because I know last season, my bullpen, I did not touch my three cheapest relievers the entire season because I had Stroman and Hamels as cheap seven-inning guys in the back of my rotation.
Yeah, my second cheapest guy I haven't played at all this year. Daniel Hudson's been just sitting on my bench crying.
I put him in once just because I had never used him.
He's 5 points more than Boxberger. His X rating is 1-3. He has a better defense, but you know, who cares about that? And he's a three. Control, and I mean his home run is one number higher, his double is one number higher, but yeah, it's I do the same thing. I haven't touched my three bench guys or Daniel Hudson. So all right, we kind of touched on this before, but what do you think your best value card is? What's the card that gives the best value for the price?
Best value for the price. All right, I need to take a look at all of them. I would say Andrew Miller, but he has been solidly mediocre this time around.
Yeah, I noticed him. My other one was Anthony Rizzo. I was watching the live stream of the guys playing the other night, and one of them had Anthony Rizzo, and he's a 14 on base. He's a lefty, and he's a clutch of plus two, and he's only 490, which I'm almost positive that's the lowest. It's or if it's not the lowest, it's pretty low in terms of getting a 14 on base.
Got a bit. Yeah, he's my first baseman as well, and now that he's solved his issue of rolling a five or lower on his chart, he's been doing very well for me recently.
The other one that comes to mind is Eric Thames. He's only 390, and he's a 14 on base against righties, and he's a 19 home run as well.
That's not bad.
And then the other one that I just noticed, I've started putting together another roster for whenever we need one. The New York relief pitcher, Dellin
Betances.
Yeah, Betances. I don't watch a lot of AL anymore. He's only 195 salary. He has an X rating of one. And He is at an 18 out. So you have to roll a 19 or 20 to get a walk or a single. And he's a 5 control. I think that's a really good relief card.
Yes, yeah, I tried to find room for him, but I couldn't. I'd say probably on offense, my favorite, or not favorite, but best value is actually Hechavarria. I mean, he's a 10 on base. He needs an 8 to get on his own chart. But he's B speed and 4 defense for 135. The way I'm looking at most of the shortstops, the ones who are good hitters are going to be pretty bad defense anyway. And shortstop is the one infield position I'm not really okay punting on defense, just because it's the only one that can get you a plus 5.
Yeah.
So the fact that he's not a great hitter is not really a concern for me. So I'm basically getting 4 defense and B speed for 135 points. Anything he gives me on offense really is just extra on top, honestly.
Yeah, I felt the same way last year with the Angels shortstop, Simmons. It was the same kind of hard. It had a really high defense, but not great offense. But it was a really low, it was like maybe the high hundreds or maybe low 200s for salary.
Yeah, and then I'd have to say, trying to look and see, all my bullpen pitchers I kind of feel are pretty good for their price. There's not like anyone who I'm like, that guy's great and he should be worth more, really. I like Halliday, but that's sentimental.
Yeah, I don't, I still haven't got on board with paying a lot for pitchers.
Yeah, I know it's tough because then you do run into the situations of, all right, I keep getting the advantage and I keep giving up hits. When I played the microbrews, Tony actually came down. We played at my place, which was nice. And he kept getting the advantage. I kept rolling 18, 19, 20. And it was kind of like, great that you got the advantage, but then you're doing nothing with it.
Yeah, I had that my last game against Navarre. I think we both did it to each other in back-to-back half innings. I had like the bases loaded, and I had like 6 singles in the inning, and I scored 4. And it was really irritating because even through the middle of the order, I was getting singles. So, but who's your favorite LE card?
LE
Halliday.
Yeah, gotta go.
I was looking at him. He's only 620 salary. That's actually not bad considering how good he is. Because he's got 4 icons and he's a 6 R plus 1.
Yeah, my one knock on him is the mistake zone. 1-2 is not great for an ace, but when he showed up, I knew he had to be my ace. There's a couple players I'll tack on just because I like the player or I like the team, and, you know, he's one of them. And the 25 plus homer is pretty good. Sorry, pulled him out.
Yeah.
The 25 plus homer is pretty solid, too. Especially this year.
I don't think...
In my bullpen, I decided I like Trinan as a – he's a little bit cheaper of a closer, but he has that R plus 2, so he has a 5 command against righties. And then if you play Enter Knight on him, he gets a plus 1 clutch, only 1 mistake zone, and he's 180. It's not too bad for – because closer is not – the way clutch is structured, clutch – or closer is only different from reliever because of the position designation.
Yeah, and so what strat cards you can use.
Right.
Yeah, I think I've used my closer like twice as a true closer and got the save. My long man, what's his name? Albert Suarez. He's a 3-inning pitch guy. I think he has just as many saves as my closer and Luke Gregerson.
Nice.
That was another... change and shift for me last year to this year was closers. Because I still got a cheap one. Gregerson's only 175, but he's a 5 R and then R plus 1. But yeah, I kind of realized that I still went pretty cheap on starting pitchers, but I put a little more money towards my bullpen to try and balance it out a little bit because it's easier to get better reliever, cheaper to get better relievers than starting pitchers. But
right. The other nice thing about relievers is that if you structure it right, they can pitch, you know, 80% of your games the first time through the rotation.
Yeah, and especially with, because I wasn't paying close enough attention when I made my team, but I have Kenta Matata, as my Matata. He's in my number one starting pitcher, and he only is a five-inning pitch guy, which I didn't realize until after the fact. I was like, oh, well, dang it.
Yeah, that was one thing. I got Rich Hill in my booster box. I was looking him over. I'm like, oh, this is a great card. He's going to be my number two. And then I saw five innings. I was like, no, if I'm going five innings, he's going to be my number four, my number five.
I just looked at James Shields' card again, and he's absolutely brutal. I mean, I've rostered him, but I would make the argument he's essentially unrosterable. He's a X zone of 3. And then he walks on 18, singles on 19, doubles on 20, and then homers on 22.
Oh, which, yeah, no, that's not good.
Yeah.
Because honestly, you roll 20, you have a, you're facing Buck or a guy with, honestly, instant replay with an MVP icon, roll 20, that's a homer.
Yeah. And he's 210 as well. So he's my number four starter.
Oh, that's a little bit rough for your number four, although I think my number four is not great either. Who is it?
Yeah, I mean, I have Skaggs as my number five, but he makes Shields look amazing. Because Skaggs' X rating is only 2.
Oh, I went Brandon McCarthy as my number four. Not terrible.
Yeah, no, he's not bad. But he's not really, he's a five-inning pitch guy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I tried to go Skaggs as my number... I tried to go Skaggs as my number four, I think. And I was like, no, I'm going a little too cheap. I'm going to make him my number five and bring someone else who can do five in. And then McCarthy, which he's honestly not too terrible. He's 4 command and homer on 25, which is big for me.
Yeah, I the other roster I was talking about, I tried the concept of going average across the board on all my starters. So all my starters is like a 4 command, 3 command plus 1, 4 command, 3 command plus 1, 4 command. But they all have an X rating of 1 to 2. So I got... No matter who my starter pitching is, there's no, if they roll 3, it's not a mistake pitch. But then to kind of counterbalance that averageness, I stuck 5 guys in the bullpen who you have to get a 19 or higher to not be out on their card. And I kind of, and the team actually turned out pretty well. So I'll be curious to use that. It might be my team I use for the next tournament. I went with that just because I my track record with starter pitching in these leagues are not great. So I was thinking, you know, if I had an average everywhere, by the time you get to the fourth or fifth guy where everybody else has the worst pitcher, at least my guy isn't as bad.
That's true, yeah.
All right, yeah. So let's wrap this up. We don't play each other this year unless we meet in the playoffs. Let's see, how many games you got left? 3 or 4? 2 maybe? 3.
I've got 4 left, but I'm still right, playing one tomorrow. So
how's it looking? You're tied for the best record, so we're gonna assume you'll make the playoffs. Oh wow, you had a 19-14 barn burner. yeah, how's your team looking? How you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. I am 9-3, but I'm 2-3 in the division right now, and I think division record's the first tiebreaker. So I'm not, if it comes down to a tie, I'm not super confident, but I'm actually playing the Beach Bums tonight, and if I win, I'm pretty sure I clinch a playoff spot, because at that point I'll have 10 wins, and the best they can do is 9 wins, so... And I know the Neptunes and the Hammers already have enough losses that they can't catch me, or possibly beating Beach Bums would also put me above the Neptunes. Pulling up the standings to take a look. Yeah, the Neptunes and the Hammers can't catch me, and if I win, the Beach Bums can't either, so it'll clinch a playoff spot. So, you know, decently confident, but at the same time, really, I want the number one seed because not having to go through the full playoffs is going to be a pretty big advantage.
Yeah, I didn't notice that until Melonheads mentioned that, because I think I had like a 6 or 7 game winning streak, and he mentioned, oh, are you trying to get the first seed? I was like, oh, maybe. And then I looked up and I forgot about that, which, yeah, I think that is that's really key to have that, too. You can kind of skip over the, because then that eliminates a bunch of opportunities for a chance to bite you and, you know, get you out. Because even with a great strat deck, it's still, if you get unlucky, there's not much you can do.
Yeah, that's part of it. I've just most of my run has been just getting good rolls. I mean, I've had a couple games where they were close and I won them with strats, but most of the time it's just good rolls.
The games I win handedly are games where I have a good shuffle of the deck and I get the really good strat cards, you know, earlier in the game. The last couple I've lost, I've just had been able to use nothing in terms of strategy cards.
Yeah, no, I hate those games where you're just discarding.
All right, well, thanks for chatting. Good luck in your last games, and hopefully see you in the playoffs.
Hopefully. Have a good one.